going to come present on the circumstances, life circumstances of women getting abortions in the U.S.
Hi, and as you can see, Rachel is a co-author on the paper that we're preparing here. Good morning, everyone. No relationships to disclose. So we know that women accessing abortion services are disproportionately poor and low income. Poor meaning under 100% of poverty, low income up to 200% of the federal poverty level. We know from previous research that when you ask women why they are having an abortion, one of the most commonly given answers is because they can't afford to have another child right now. However, we know that poverty is not just a lack of money, financial difficulties. It is very complicated and has a lot of tentacles into the other parts of women's lives. So what we were interested in is trying to describe more accurately what poverty looks like in the lives of women who are accessing abortions. And just to clarify, I'm not talking about another measure of deprivation. There are a lot of those, they're all very interesting, but that's not what I'm looking at here. I'm looking at what else is going on in women's lives that may or may not be associated with poverty that could be classified as disruptive, turbulent, chaotic. So let me just give you some examples of, well, actually all of the things that we asked women about who were accessing abortion services. We asked them, in the past year of their lives, had they been unemployed for a significant amount of time? Had they separated from their partner? Had they fallen behind on paying their rent or their mortgage? Had they moved multiple times? Had they themselves or someone in their family experienced a serious health problem? Had they experienced the death of a close friend or family member? Had they had a baby? Had they had a partner be incarcerated? And had they been a victim of a crime? So I hope I'm giving you a sense of what we were trying to measure here. And to be clear also, these are not all necessarily negative events, but they certainly are disruptive. They are certainly not restricted to low-income women. Anybody can experience this type of disruption in their lives. But we felt that these events might be more common for women living in poverty, and that they also might help to create the conditions that that lead to poverty. So we thought that investigating these potentially disrupting life events could provide some insight into both unintended pregnancies and women's motivations for obtaining abortions. So just succinctly, our research questions were to be able to describe the social disruptions in the lives of women obtaining abortions and to explore the associations between those disruptions and poverty that women were experiencing and their contraceptive use at the time that they became pregnant. Our vehicle to do this was Guttmacher's periodic survey of women obtaining abortions that we most recently did in 2008 and 2009. The aim of this survey, which is nationally representative, is to describe the demographic characteristics of women obtaining abortions. And the full report on this has actually recently been published online. You can check it out on our website. So I'm not going to go into the full demographics here. And also the methodology was also published, so I'll be fairly brief when I talk about that. Our sample was drawn from our census of abortion providers, meaning all hospitals, clinics, and physicians' offices that provided abortions in 2005, stratified by whether or not they were a hospital, where they were in the country, and their 2005 caseload to really try to make sure that we were getting a representative sample of facilities. Participating facilities gave the questionnaire out to women accessing abortions, usually some point in their procedure, so day of abortion. And it was made clear to the women that this survey did not have anything to do with their medical services and was confidential and anonymous. The data were weighted to take into account non-response. For the first time, our survey included a qualitative component, and you know, we're very happy about this. We did actually, it was 49 in-depth interviews at three different clinical sites, and I'll say a little bit about how that worked. You know, interviewers traveled to the facilities. Women accessing abortion on the days we were there were screened by the clinic staff to make sure they were over 18 and that they spoke English, and also, importantly, that the $35 that they would receive as remuneration for participating in the interview was not desperately needed by them to pay for their abortion at this time, that they had their money in hand, and that this participating in the interview was not going to be coercive in terms of, you know, allowing them to access the abortion this day. Our, you know, transcripts were... our interviews were transcribed, coded in NVivo with an open coding system allowing for new ideas to emerge, and all of our procedures and materials received IRB approval from our own IRB. So again, the full demographics have been described elsewhere, but I just wanted to point out some that we felt were particularly relative to the questions we're looking at now, and also to say that the qualitative sample characteristics were similar on these points to the quantitative. So I've already said a disproportionate amount of women accessing abortion services are poor. This is what it really looks like. And this was the characteristic that changed the most between our 2000 survey and our 2008 survey, and it's really stark. I mean, the amount of women living below 100% of the poverty level was at 42% in 2008 among women accessing abortion services. A full 69% of women getting abortions in this country in 2008 were poor or low income. And you can see how this has changed 1994, 2000 to the present day. This is due in part to the recession and overall increase in poverty among US women. So in sum, the picture of women obtaining abortion services in the United States in 2008 was that they are economically disadvantaged mothers, many of them single. And most of them, a full 60%, had experienced a disruptive life event in the past year. You can see the most common life events for the total sample here. We found that certain events were significantly associated with living in poverty. According to chi-square statistics, you can see that actually that should be moved two or more times. 14% of lowest income women experience this, compared to only 8% of women with higher incomes. Having a baby, remember again, that was 10% of the entire sample had a baby in the past year. And again, all of these things were more significant among lower income women. We also wanted to look at the number of disruptive life events that women reported having, and this was also significantly associated with poverty. So this y-axis is the number of life events and the percentage of women on the x-axis, and you can see that lowest income women were much more likely to experience a greater number of these life events within the past year. We also found a significant association with the number of children. Women who had more children were more likely to experience three or more disruptive life events in the past year. The disruptive life events were really common among our interviewees also. And of course, we found things that we didn't ask about on the quantitative, which was interesting, such as generally unstable relationships, not just separations, experiencing physical abuse, starting or stopping school, drug use, and getting sober. So again, not all necessarily negative, but definitely disruptive. The woman in this current slide was telling me about how she was holding down four jobs at the time, leaving her partner, getting sober, and then when this pregnancy hit, it was just this numbing euphoric feeling. I was like, well, it really doesn't get much worse than this, so I think I can forget about everything that's been going on in my and just live my life, get this done, and move on. Instead of digging my hole deeper, I'm digging myself out. Nice to hear that this person, you know, while the unintended pregnancy was kind of a straw that broke the camel's back, it was also experienced as a turning point. Another illustrative quote quote about the multiple facets of instability comes from this woman who did not have as much of a silver lining, was currently homeless at the time. I'm not actually going to read this quote out loud because I'm running out of time. And I just also want to point out that this quote shows that some of the instability was directly attributable to the pregnancy. So on to our question about the associations between disruptive events and contraceptive use. First, a word about contraceptive use in the entire sample. As we've seen in many previous surveys, it's about half and half use at the time in the month that you became pregnant versus non-use. So you can see 49% of women not using contraception at the time they became pregnant, and those who were, 51%, mostly using condoms and then some hormonal methods. Again, significantly associated with poverty, consistent with previous research, the poorer you were, the less likely you were to be using contraception in the month that you became pregnant. We found in the qualitative sample that experiencing disruptive life events was associated with having problems using contraception. What happened when you didn't go back for your depot shot? You go and get them like every 3 months, and it had been like five. I just took over a new business and I'm working like 90 hours a week. I'm working like you wouldn't imagine, so I completely didn't even think about it. And interestingly, not shown here, this woman also said, you know, and I barely have time to have sex. So, you know, previous research has also shown that infrequent sexual activity is associated with contraceptive non-use. Women also talked about how losing and changing jobs and health insurance also affected this. However, in the quantitative data, we didn't find any significant associations between number of disruptive life events on the x-axis and contraceptive use, percentage using contraception over on the y-axis. We examined it by different, you know, hormonal versus condoms. It didn't find any life events. We think that this might be because, as we saw in the qualitative data, sometimes contraceptive use had stopped way before the month that you became pregnant, or it could just be that there really wasn't an association. So the takeaway points are that a majority of abortion patients had experienced a disruptive life event in the past year, and poor women were much more likely to experience these events. And just to point out that, you know, the associations can kind of go both ways. Having a child, for instance, as 10% of these women had and were poor, can directly both move a family into poverty and exacerbate poverty that's already there. So we can kind of see how this is both influencing women's contraceptive use and their decision to have an abortion. Thanks very much.
Questions, if people want to step up to the microphone.
Very interesting questions about the contraceptive use. It seems like it's but there's a lot of different variables at play there. So, for example, condoms, there's a major power structure involved in that. Withdrawal is questionable contraceptive method, but I guess my question is, I'm really interested in how much social policy around oral contraceptives played into not being able to get birth control pills because they're expensive, because their providers won't talk to them about them or whatever.
This current research didn't really, besides the qualitative, the quantitative didn't really allow women to tell us why. And the largest thing that we saw on the qualitative was changing jobs, lack of health insurance, couldn't pay. The cost. They were paying, they couldn't. There was also a lot of provider switching. People moving a lot, don't have a provider, ran out of the prescription, were not able to get a new one because they're in a new place.
Okay, I'm sorry, but she didn't ask 52% or whatever percentage was that were using OCPs, whether they had some sort of clinical plan that provided low-cost OCPs.
The quantitative survey did look at their insurance coverage, but not specifically for that.
Do we have any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Laura.
Thank you.